Welcome back, my dear Buddhas. We will start with Chapter 3, Golden Autumns, reading from pages 143 to 163 today. So let's begin. Sowing innumerable seeds of happiness along his way, Shinichi continued his travels for peace in this new realm of America. Wherever he went, he brought with him a light of hope and sent forth waves of joy and delight. On the morning of October 6th, Shinichi and the other leaders from Japan left San Francisco for Seattle, which by plane was about 2 hours further north along the west coast of the United States. According to information received from the Overseas Affairs section at the Soka Gakkai headquarters, there were about 20 members living in Seattle, but they had not yet even begun to hold discussion meetings. In addition, the Overseas Affairs section had been able to contact the local members only by mail and therefore did not know whether anyone would be available to welcome Shinichi and his party on their arrival. Thus, the group embarked for Seattle with some sense of apprehension. The plane landed in Seattle shortly after 10 a.m. Contrary to their fears, however, a group of more than a dozen members was there to greet them. "Sensei, welcome," several voices called. Having spotted Shinichi and his party, the members hurried over to greet them. Shinichi waved to them and said with a smile, "Hello there, thank you for coming." "I don't know if you remember me," began one of the women, blushing, "but you were kind enough to meet me in March last year, just before I left Japan." "Yes, I do remember you," Shinichi assured her. On that previous occasion, Shinichi had sensed during their conversation that there was some discord between the woman and her husband, a member of the American Armed Forces. He remembered stressing to her that family harmony was a foundation for happiness, and to encourage her, he had given her a medal commemorating a youth division athletic meet. Now, beside her, clinging shyly to her skirt, stood a small boy, who appeared to have just started walking, and a little girl of about 3. The boy would have been born since his mother's arrival in the United States. Shinichi could sense from the woman's bright expression that she was now happy in her family life, and he felt delighted for her. With a few words of encouragement, it is possible to help someone open his or her life to a profound extent. Consequently, Shinichi always strove earnestly to cherish each momentary encounter and offer heartfelt encouragement to his fellow members. "What a cute little fellow," Shinichi said as he bent down and scooped the boy up in his arms. With his free hand, he reached into his coat pocket, brought out a copper penny and gave it to the boy. "I'm sorry, I don't have any gifts," Shinichi said apologetically. Snug in Shinichi's arms, the boy clutched the coin, gurgling and laughing contentedly. The women had been somewhat nervous at the thought of meeting the Soka Gakkai president in person, but when they saw the warm and unaffected manner in which Shinichi picked up and played with the toddler, their tense expressions visibly relaxed. A young woman brought out a camera and said, "Sensei, please join us for a photo." "All right, since you're all here, let's take a picture together," Shinichi agreed. As the members began to line up with Shinichi in the center, he suddenly slipped to the back of the group. Everyone turned around and gave him a puzzled look. "All of you, please stand in front. I am fine back here. I want to watch over you from behind." This was Shinichi's honest, heartfelt sentiment. Although he naturally took leadership for the Kosen Rufu movement in his capacity as Soka Gakkai president, Shinichi's real wish was to always support his fellow members from behind the scenes. The members could not hide their surprise at Shinichi's words, which contrasted with their image of a president of a large organization. Shinichi's entire attitude was completely different from the authoritarian behavior displayed by many leaders in society. Not only did he shun formality, but also warmth and sincerity emanated from his very being. After they had finished taking photos, Shinichi asked, "Why don't all of you come with us to our hotel?" The members cried out with delight. All of them were overjoyed at the suggestion. But the leaders accompanying Shinichi were somewhat apprehensive. They wondered whether it would be all right to bring so many people and mass to their hotel. The group then split up and piled into several cars to make their way to the hotel. Seattle, which is surrounded by water and mountains, is renowned for its great scenic beauty. Elliott Bay, the city's harbor, opens out onto Puget Sound and, ultimately, the Pacific Ocean. The bay is fringed by gentle slopes descending almost to the water's edge. Beyond the thickly wooded hills glistens the silvery, snow-capped summit of Mount Rainier, which bears a striking resemblance to Mount Fuji in Japan. Although latitudinally Seattle is situated further north than the northernmost tip of the Japanese island of Hokkaido, also known for its cold and snowy weather, its climate is only slightly cooler than that of the more temperate southerly city of Tokyo. Seattle is shielded from cold winter winds blowing in from both the Pacific Ocean and the continent by the Olympic Peninsula to the west and the Cascade Range to the east. Even in January, the coldest month of the year, Seattle's average temperature is around 5 degrees Celsius or 41 degrees Fahrenheit. Nevertheless, having just been in Hawaii, a land of perpetual summer, Shinichi found the weather chilly. The hotel where the Japanese party was staying was located in the center of the city and commanded a clear view of Elliott Bay, bustling with marine traffic. As soon as the members had assembled in Shinichi's room, the atmosphere became like a discussion meeting. The members introduced themselves to Shinichi one by one, reporting to him on their current situations. They had been eagerly awaiting Shinichi's visit, and some were so overcome by emotion that tears flowed as they spoke. After the introductions, Shinichi said, "Since we have this opportunity to talk together, please feel free to ask me anything you like." As if they had been longing for the chance to do just that, the members bombarded Shinichi with questions, some concerning problems at work, some about illness. A middle-aged American man requested that the Soka Gakkai produce a sutra book for English speakers containing an English transliteration of the liturgy. Since there was no English sutra book available, members who did not understand Japanese had been forced to learn Gongyo by ear. "Yes, I can see that this must be a great problem. I'll look into the matter right away." Upon his return to Japan, Shinichi immediately set the wheels into motion for the production of an English sutra book. Wherever he went, Shinichi took pains to hold frank discussions with the members. From such dialogue, he would grasp what was in people's hearts, drawing out their hopes and wishes to spot any problem areas that might stand in the way of their advancement. Moreover, when a problem did exist, he acted quickly to resolve it. When presented with a particularly difficult problem, it was not at all unusual for him to ponder and agonize over it for days on end, going through many a sleepless night as a result. Genuine dialogue is characterized by empathy, joy, and understanding. Leaders who neglect dialogue invariably become authoritarian and bureaucratic. Shinichi's thoughts were always with the members who were struggling valiantly on the forefront of the Kosen Rufu movement. If anything, he was a young general constantly moving from one side to another on the front lines. Shinichi noticed that one of the members who had come to welcome him and the other leaders at the airport had so far failed to show up at the hotel. Concern over her absence nagged him as he strove to respond to the members' questions. "We're missing one person," he remarked. "I wonder what happened to her." He repeated the question again and again during the discussion. The members had just about exhausted their store of questions when the door swung open with a loud thud. Everyone turned around, startled. There, standing barefoot, a pair of high heels in one hand and a large, heavy-looking tape recorder in the other, was a rather tall woman of Japanese descent. Gasping for breath and perspiration streaming down her face, she placed the machine on the floor. "What happened?" asked Shinichi. "I'm sorry," the woman replied, breathing heavily. On the way from the airport, I got separated from the other cars and I lost my way. Oh, so that's what happened. You must be exhausted. I was worried about you, you know, Shinichi said, smiling. The woman, whose name was Taiko Goodman, had come from the state of Montana. Leaving Bekar the previous day, she had driven through the night, crossing the snow-covered Rocky Mountains. It was shortly after dawn when she finally arrived at the airport in Seattle to welcome Shinichi and the other leaders from Japan. On the way from the airport to the hotel, however, she had lost sight of the other members' cars. Unfamiliar with the layout of Seattle, she had spent quite some time driving around in search of the hotel. When she finally managed to find it after much trouble and distress, she made the mistake of parking her car in a lot some distance away. She then set off on foot towards the hotel, lugging with her a huge tape recorder, a piece of equipment she had bought specifically to record President Yamamoto's guidance and play it for the people she had introduced to the Daishonin's Buddhism back in Montana. The bulky recorder was excruciatingly heavy. Her arm ached after walking only a few meters. And, to make matters worse, she was wearing a pair of brand new high heels that didn't fit properly and chafed at her heels as she walked. Time after time, the combined pain from the heavy weight of the recorder and her ill-fitting shoes forced the woman to stop walking. Meanwhile, time was slipping away. The thought that perhaps President Yamamoto had already left the hotel made her grow more frantic, but her progress remained painfully slow. Tears of frustration welled helplessly in her eyes. By the time she arrived in the hotel lobby, she was barefoot, the offending shoes in her hands. The intense pain of walking with the heavy recorder while wearing shoes that rubbed her heels raw had made her forget all sense of shame or concern for what others might think. Shinichi looked at the tape recorder and said, "Thank you. I'm so touched that you should think of your fellow members. There is nothing more praiseworthy than a person who strives earnestly for others." These words deeply touched Taiko's heart. Returning to her senses, she looked at Shinichi. "Sensei," she attempted in response, but she was so moved that no words would come. She felt her spirits suddenly lifting. This despondent feeling in her heart swept away like the clearing of a heavy mist. Shinichi's words were to change the course of her life. Taiko Goodman had taken faith 3 years ago in Japan when her mother developed cancer and doctors had given her just 6 months to live. Taiko had heard about the Daishonin's Buddhism in the midst of her despair and immediately started exerting herself earnestly in faith, exactly as the person who introduced her instructed. When her mother went back into the hospital for tests 2 months later, all signs of cancer had completely disappeared. Shortly thereafter, Taiko married an American she had become acquainted with at work and returned with him to the United States. But her new life in a strange and unfamiliar land only made her increasingly homesick for Japan. Taiko's intense longing to return to her homeland prompted her to strive diligently in faith, and she persuaded first one and then another person to embrace the practice until she had introduced more than 10 people. It was then that her resolve began to waver. "If I go home, who will look after the members I leave behind?" she thought. Thus, all her diligent practice and energetic efforts at propagation, undertaken solely for the purpose of returning to Japan, had instead given her second thoughts about leaving America. Taiko was torn. It could be said that this marked an awakening to her mission. In the midst of this dilemma, she learned of the scheduled visit to America by President Shinichi Yamamoto and other leaders from Japan. She had driven all night to Seattle with the fervent wish to meet the Soka Gakkai president. There is nothing more praiseworthy than a person who strives earnestly for others. The moment she heard Shinichi say this, emotion and determination welled up inside her. "I will strive here in America," she vowed in her heart. for those who have placed their trust in me and started practicing Nichiren Daishonin's Buddhism. Human brilliance derives from the light of altruistic action. It is not an exaggeration to say that people are truly human only when they endeavor to dedicate their lives for their friends and fellow human beings. Here, too, lies the way to break through the shell of the small ego and develop and expand one's spiritual capacity to a profound degree. Shinichi was overjoyed to see the pure-hearted seeking spirit of this woman who had traveled all the way from Montana for the sake of the law. He sensed that, scattered throughout this vast land of America, friends were beginning to emerge from the earth. Friends who would lead lives dedicated to the mission of propagating the true law far and wide. The time of worldwide Kosen Rufu had truly arrived. Shinichi presented the members who had come to this room with copies of the Soka Gakkai, the English language publication introducing the organization's activities, as well as Fukusa, inscribed with the word joy in Japanese, which he had brought along as gifts. It was after 1 in the afternoon when the members' encounter and dialogue with Shinichi drew to an end and they all finally left the hotel. Shinichi had wholeheartedly thrown himself into the task of giving guidance and encouragement to the members without even taking a short rest after his plane trip. He now felt deeply fatigued. Shinichi decided to accompany the other leaders for a look around the streets of Seattle and then lunch. As they drove through the city, Nagayasu Masaki pointed to the sign of a steakhouse. "Sensei, that restaurant has steaks for $1.15. It's a bargain too good to miss. How about having lunch there?" The party from Japan had made frugality their motto on this trip, an idea that had come from Shinichi, who proposed that they keep their personal expenditures to a minimum. That way, they could use their funds more effectively to bring joy to the local members, for example, treating them to refreshments and so forth. Strict foreign exchange regulations in Japan in those days limited to US$35 per day the amount of foreign currency its citizens traveling abroad could purchase, at an exchange rate of 360 yen to the dollar. Given this situation, the only way for the group to keep their expenses down was to cut back on spending for meals. Throughout the entire trip, Shinichi and his party, when they were alone together, never once ate a full-fledged meal at any restaurant, whether in the hotels where they stayed or elsewhere. They usually contented themselves with coffee and toast, bought a hot dog, or went to a self-service cafeteria. Occasionally, to eat something nutritious, they would look for a cheap Chinese restaurant. A steak for $1.15 was therefore a most welcome find. Cheerfully, the group entered the restaurant and ordered. The steaks that were brought out, however, were as tough as shoe leather and thoroughly unappetizing. "So these are real American steaks. Not much, are they?" remarked Katsu Kiyohara dryly to Chuhei Yamadaira. "Well, for the price, you can't really expect them to taste all that great. The meat's tough, all right, but if we had a little soy sauce, it probably wouldn't be that bad, I suppose." Listening to their casual exchange, Shinichi wished that he could give them a trip where they could at least enjoy satisfying meals. However, when he thought of the local members, many of whom were struggling to make ends meet, it was natural that he and the other leaders maintain a spirit of frugality in their own affairs and exert their utmost efforts to serve the members. This is the spirit of a true leader of Kosen Rufu, and it is the conduct and sincerity of such a leader that inspire people's trust. With a bright smile, Shinichi said, "I am so sorry you have to eat a steak like this. But let's always uphold the spirit of desiring little and contenting ourselves with what we have in the Gakkai, especially remembering that leaders begin to grow corrupt when they forget about frugality and purity of intention." After lunch, The group strolled through the streets of Seattle. Noticing an elderly man polishing shoes on the sidewalk, Shinichi said to him genially in Japanese, "Hello, how's business?" Masaki translated this for the man, who asked, "Are you from Japan?" When Shinichi nodded that he was, the man gave him a friendly smile and said, "I saw the Japanese prince and princess yesterday." Until the day before, Crown Prince Akihito and his wife, Princess Michiko, had been visiting the United States at the invitation of President Eisenhower to commemorate 100 years of U.S.-Japan friendship. The royal couple had left Japan for the United States on September 22nd, their itinerary including stops in Honolulu, San Francisco, Washington, D.C., New York, and Chicago, before finally making their way to Seattle. On October 5th, the previous day, they had attended a reception in their honor hosted by Japanese-American citizens at the Japanese Garden located on the grounds of Seattle's University of Washington. The prince and princess then departed for their final stop in Portland, Oregon, before flying back to Japan that evening. This visit to the United States marked the royal couple's first overseas trip since their wedding in April of the previous year. From the Shoeshine Man's account, the entire city of Seattle had turned out to welcome the Japanese royalty. Earlier in June that year, President Eisenhower's scheduled visit to Japan had been postponed at the request of the Japanese government, with internal instability stemming from opposition to the ratification of the new U.S.-Japan Security Treaty cited as the prime reason. Ever since then, there had been growing reports in Japan that the visit's suspension had exacerbated anti-Japanese sentiment in America. Consequently, the Japanese government was concerned with how the American people would react to a visit by Japanese royalty. The tour by the shy young royal couple, however, seemed to leave many Americans with a favorable impression, promoting a greater sense of affinity with Japan. Shinichi was relieved to hear that their trip had been a success. The group then did some more sightseeing around the city by car. Upon returning to the hotel, Shinichi began to feel strange. The area from his neck down to his chest began to itch with a burning intensity. Looking in the mirror, he saw that not only his neck and chest, but also his face was covered with red welts. It was a rash that soon covered his entire body. But that was only the start. Within moments, he felt the onset of spasms and pain in his stomach and began to have diarrhea. He also seemed to be running a high fever. Thinking he would feel better if he rested for a short while, Shinichi lay down on the bed. No doubt because of the fever, however, suddenly he felt deathly cold and started shivering so badly that his whole body shook. He lay on the bed, his lips pressed together in a painful grimace. The steak Shinichi had eaten at lunch apparently had not agreed with him. In addition, fatigue resulting from jet lag and lack of sleep, and the temperature difference between the year-round summer weather of Hawaii and the cooler climate of Seattle had all combined to severely undermine his already frail health. Shinichi took some of the medicine he had brought along for such a contingency, but it seemed to do little to relieve the itching, diarrhea, or chills. Yet he could not remain in bed forever. There was a discussion meeting to attend that evening. As he got out of bed, there was a knock at the door. It was Kiyoshi Jujo. When he saw the rash on Shinichi's face, he said in alarm, "Sensei, what's the matter?" "It seemed to be some kind of rash," Shinichi said. "I've also had a touch of diarrhea." "Shall I call a doctor?" Jujo inquired. "No, I'll be fine. I took some medicine. I'll feel better after a short rest." "Sensei," began Jujo adamantly, "please don't go to the discussion meeting this evening. After all, you met quite a few of the members earlier. And besides, you still have a long journey ahead of you. Please try to regain your health." "But everyone has been looking forward to today's meeting," Shinichi said. "They'll be so disappointed if I don't go." If you push yourself unreasonably now and collapse later, it will be too late. The other leaders and I will take care of the discussion meeting as well as the formation of the new district. Please get some rest, at least just for today, urged Jujo. It was painfully hard for Shinichi to miss the meeting when he thought how disappointed the members would be, but Jujo was right. They had only just begun their overseas trip, and they had yet to visit Canada and Brazil. If he were to fall ill now and be unable to carry out his objectives, far more members would end up being disappointed later. Besides, if he went to the meeting looking like he did, his face all red and swollen with a rash, it would only worry the members needlessly. Reluctantly, he took Jujo's advice. Shortly after 5 p.m., Jujo and the other leaders left the hotel for the discussion meeting. Outside, it had started to rain. After they left, Shinichi kneeled on the bed and chanted Daimoku for a while. He prayed fervently, fighting a desperate life and death struggle to conquer this devil of illness that was sapping his health. After he finished chanting, Shinichi lay in bed and rested. He felt bitterly frustrated to be plagued by such ill health when he had so long a road yet to travel for the goal of Kosenryfu. He thought back to the conversation he had had with his wife, Mineko, on the evening of May 3rd earlier that year, the day that signaled the beginning of a journey for the widespread propagation of the Daishonin's Buddhism throughout the world. Mineko had been waiting with a meal prepared for him when he returned home late that evening. The table was set with the usual modest fare. I thought there'd be sekihan, which is mixed rice with red beans and served on festive occasions, to celebrate my inauguration, but I see it's the same as always, commented Shinichi. Mineko smiled and replied resolutely, as of this day, I no longer consider this house to have a husband. So since today is a funeral for the Yamamoto family, I haven't prepared any sekihan. Yes, you have a point, Shinichi smiled too. At her stout-hearted words, he felt a momentary twinge of remorse. But more than anything, he was gladdened by her invincible spirit. Her words had given him immense courage. From now on, there would probably be almost no time for him to play with his children or to enjoy quiet moments at home with his family. It would be unbearably lonely for his wife. However, Shinichi had vowed to dedicate his life to Kosenryfu, and Mineko, as his wife, boldly showed her resolute determination to support him. Shinichi did not desire ordinary, mundane happiness for himself. In some respects, he gladly chose to sacrifice himself for Kosenryfu. Thus, he was deeply touched and gratified to learn that his wife was of the same mind. Nevertheless, Shinichi thought it enough that the sacrifice stopped with his own family, praying fervently that his fellow members would realize a flowering of harmony and tranquility in their own families and that each person would savor true happiness. He had resolved to dedicate his life to that goal. Mineko said to Shinichi, I didn't prepare any sekihan, but I'd like to buy you a present to celebrate your inauguration. Is there anything you'd like? Well, a travel bag would be nice, the biggest, sturdiest one you can find. A travel bag. May I ask where you plan to go with such a big bag? Inquired Mineko. I'm going to travel around the world on President Toda's behalf, Shinichi responded. Mineko smiled, her eyes sparkling. So the journey for worldwide Kosenryfu is about to begin at last. Shinichi smiled back and nodded. From the beginning, Shinichi was prepared to lay down his life for the cause of propagating the Daishonin's Buddhism. He had not the slightest fear nor regret about fighting on the battlefields of Kosenryfu and one day falling there. The doctors had told him that he would not live to the age of 30. He could collapse at any moment, and it would come as no surprise. But he had inherited the dream of his mentor, Josei Toda, and had just taken the first step for worldwide Kosenryfu. He could not afford to succumb to illness now. As he lay in bed at the hotel in Seattle, Shinichi lamented over his poor health. "I want to live," he prayed as the fever racked his body, "so that I may fulfill my vow to Sensei." All the while, he recalled the Gosho passage. "Nammyoho Renge Kyo" is like the roar of a lion. What sickness can therefore be an obstacle? The rain outside intensified, lashing against the window. Meanwhile, Vice General Director Kiyoshi Jujo and the other leaders had left the hotel and gone to the home of a member who had taken on the central role for activities in the Seattle area. After discussing the details for the planned formation of a district in that city, the leaders then headed for the hall where the discussion meeting was to be held. About 40 members had assembled when they arrived. It was quite a large turnout for this, the very first discussion meeting in Seattle. This time, the meeting was not held at a private home, but at a medium-sized hall. Consequently, there was something forlorn about their small gathering. At the start of the meeting, Jujo explained that Shinichi would be unable to attend the meeting. The members were clearly crestfallen at the news. The leaders from Japan then got up one by one to address the gathering, trying with all their might to change the somber atmosphere that hung heavily in the room. But all their efforts were in vain. Many of the Japanese women had brought along their American husbands who were non-members. This made Jujo and the others exert themselves all the more strenuously. However, the more they raised their voices and spoke with exciting and energetic fervor, the gloomier the expressions of the members grew. The happy, smiling faces and the warm and friendly atmosphere always evident at the meetings Shinichi attended were nowhere to be seen. "This is terrible," thought Jujo to himself, a wave of panic washing over him. "Something's wrong. What is it?" His mind raced back over the meetings Shinichi had participated in and how the Soka Gakkai president had given guidance on those occasions. The members then split up into Japanese and English-speaking groups for informal discussions. That brings us to the end of our reading today. I hope you have a lovely day.